Welcome to Period Drama Queens, a podcast exploring period dramas.
The drama, the periods.
The tropes, the frissons.
The quips and the quacks.
This season, we're taking a turn about the 90s.
We'll discuss the best period dramas created in the era of girl power, crop tops and grunge.
Time for introductions. We're two best friends who live on different sides of the world.
And we both love period dramas.
I'm Jenny, an English lit nerd and prudish mother of two who once attended a hip-hop class and is universally described as tolerable, I suppose.
I'm Millie, a sexually confused mother of one who has never attended a hip-hop class. I never talk about myself this way, but my friends have described me as a famous wit.
So bad. So bad. Millie, what are we talking about today?
The film we're talking about today, Jenny, is Howards End, directed by James Ivory, written by Ruth Prower Jabvala. She won the Oscar for Best Screenplay.
So why Howards End? Why have you picked Howards End? This was your choice. I'd never seen it before.
I'm quite a fan of Ian Forster, who wrote the original novel.
Mm-hmm.
In 1910. This 1992 Howards End is a Merchant Ivory film. And Merchant Ivory is a film production company that I think is kind of like one of the stereotypical things, like moods that you think of when you think of period drama. Well, you know, like when people think of like British films and period dramas, they think of, you know, people walking into rooms and going, oh, I didn't know you were here. And then like the longing looks, things unsaid.
Mm.
Extravagant costumes and beautiful cinematography and lots of repression and like,
oh yeah, and that's the mark of this.
That's, I think that's all very Merchant Ivory
company. Okay,
yeah,
okay.
But then I guess, well, you, I think that it's very quintessential, but you are not a Merchant Ivory head, so I guess
I'm not. What else has been made under the Merchant Ivory banner?
They've made 44 films.
Jeepers.
to me, their famous ones are Room of the View from the 1980s. Mm-hmm. Remains mm-hmm. of the Day. Passage yeah. to India. That's Ian Forster.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And Maurice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really need to up on my Ian Forster.
Yeah, and I'm your Merchant Ivory. And then
I'm a Merchant Ivory.
In 2004, Merchant died. Because Merchant Ivory is James Ivory, the director. And then Ismail Merchant was the producer. And then Ruth.
Oh.
Was the writer, so they're kind of Merchant Ivory, but in
okay, that's really helpful to know because it sounds really bad. The name,
oh, yeah, fair point.
I was like, it's about like trading ivory. I was like, whew,
and so
a bit backwards.
They started their careers in India because Merchant is an Indian Muslim, so okay. And then Ruth is married to an Indian person. They started their career in India and did a lot of Indian films before.
Oh, cool.
So James Ivory directed and I think he wrote the screenplay as well for Call Me By Your Name.
Oh, very interesting.
Like queer cinema as well in there as well, obviously, like Call Me By Your Name very clearly. And then Ian Forster was gay and Maurice is a gay novel. Hugh Grant's in it. That's my info dump about Merchant Ivory.
I didn't know literally anything. Very uninformed there. yeah, Ian Forster, don't know. Howards End, let's just get it out of the way. Sounds very rude, I think.
You think it sounds like a bomb?
As soon as... Yeah, no, I don't think... No, the other end. The other end, I was thinking.
Do you think of a penis when someone says...
Well, yeah, like the... Like, you know, like, did Howard get his end away?
Oh, like doing it.
Like, yeah, like doing it. That's what I thought.
This is just because I watched it when I was a kid, and so, like, who would ever... Who would could possibly be rude?
Period. Period. Okay, so... That's our introduction to the film. Is there more that we need to talk about? It's an adaptation of the novel by Ian Forster.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as sexual as I would say the title suggests.
Mm-hmm. It's not a porno. What is Howards End, Jenny? You've watched it. What is
that? Well, yeah, it's pretty disappointing. Turns out it's just a house.
But what a house.
But what a house, according to Vanessa Redgrave. Oh, yeah, mad. My goodness. Has a woman ever been so in love with a house? I don't think so.
I don't know.
So, Howards End tells the story of three families who are interconnected, and the eponymous Howards End, which is a house, which somehow connects them all. So there are the Schlegel sisters, there's Helen, there's Margaret, there's also an invalid brother.
He's not an invalid, he's just an Enneagram 5.
He's just an Enneagram 5. Okay, there's also an antisocial brother.
Yeah, antisocial brother, yeah.
Antisocial brother. There is also the Wilcoxes, who are a wealthy family who, as part of their property portfolio, have Howards End, which is a lovely countryside place that came from Ruth, the matriarch of the family. So there's Ruth Wilcox married to Henry Wilcox, and they've got some sons. There's a slight entanglement between the Schlegels and the Wilcoxes, where they briefly think they're going to, Helen and Paul are going to get engaged, but then they don't. And then there's a friendship between Margaret and Ruth Wilcox, who then dies. Madness ensues. Somehow Margaret ends up married to Henry. Helen hates Henry Wilcox.
Don't we all hate Henry Wilcox?
We all hate Henry Wilcox. In her dying breath, Ruth bequeathed Howards End to Margaret, but this doesn't get passed on, so there's intrigue. In fact, the note that she wrote was burned by the family. But of course, because they've ended up together, Margaret and Henry, will she get Howards End? That's the question. And then thrown into the mix, there's this very awkward young man called Leonard Bass, who's a sort of upwardly mobile clerk, who the Schlegels take on as a kind of pet project, over an umbrella incident. They get the wrong umbrella. Very funny. And he is shacked up with a poor lady called Jackie, who is given absolutely zero kind of dimensionality to her. And yeah, even more madness ensues when the Bass then show up and at a wedding. There's a wedding crashing. It's a really saucy one. It reveals an affair.
It's a saucy wedding crash.
It really is. And then there is a secret hookup between Leonard Bass and Helen Schlegel, who she's fallen for. She falls pregnant, but we don't know that. There's an intervention about to happen, and it's revealed that Helen is pregnant. And then Leonard shows up out of the blue and fights with Charles Bass, who thinks Charles Wilcox. Oh my gosh. Who he feels has dishonored him. And Leonard gets crushed by a bookcase and has a heart attack. R.I.P. Leonard. Inexplicably, Margaret and Henry Wilcox stay together and help raise their nephew and look after Helen. The end.
The end. Well done.
Thanks. Yeah, so it's a real comedic romp.
Laugh a minute. Laugh a minute. Period.
Next on the agenda is our relationship to the film. So you've touched on this a little bit, but tell me more.
Well, yeah, I used to watch it when I was a kid. It wasn't on as high rotation as like The Sense of Sensibility and Pride and Prejudice from the 90s, but we did used to watch it as a family. What about you? You never seen it?
Never seen it. Watched it for the first time a couple of weeks ago and really loved it. I was like, have I not heard of this? Not sure. Like, I'd heard of Ian Forster, but never read any of his novels. And it is a he, right? You never know.
That sounded very rude, but do you not know who Ian Forster is?
I really don't. I don't know anything about Ian Forster. No, I did not study Ian Forster. Ian Forster for fun.
I guess because Oxford, like, literature ended, in 1850, and you can't read anything past that?
100%. Oh, maybe push just in 1900, and then we'll stop.
Oh, and he's, like, Edwardian, so...
Yeah, no, trash.
Trash, absolutely. Well, Ian Forster is an author. He was gay.
Yep.
He wrote quite a few novels. He was part of the Bloomsbury set.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was chums with Virginia Woolf, and I read somewhere...
And Catherine Mansfield, maybe.
And I read somewhere that Meg and Helen are based on the Woolf sisters.
Ah, that's cool.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true, but...
Seems plausible, doesn't it? Based on the, I don't know, eccentricities and what I know of Virginia Woolf.
I feel like the Schlegel's friends are kind of like Bloomsbury set-y, oh, right?
Yeah, 100%. Okay, so our relationship to film is, you have a long-standing one. Mm-hmm. I am just fresh and new.
Period.
Some overall reflections.
So what did you think?
Yeah, I really loved it. I was surprised by it because I genuinely didn't know what was going to happen, which doesn't often happen with period dramas because I normally read the book or have seen it a million times. I mean, the bookcase scene, we'll get to it, but I was shocked.
I didn't see it coming.
Did not see Emma Thompson, Margaret, marrying the old dude. I was shocked by that.
That's the thing, I think. That's what stuck out to me a lot watching the film. I never see it coming that she marries Mr. Wilcox. I don't know if it really makes sense. Like, why would she marry him?
Yeah, I don't know. Is it out of some kind of weird honouring of the elder Mrs. Wilcox, Vanessa Redgrave? Is she genuinely affectionate for him?
I read a review that was like, Ruth Wilcox and Meg have like this amazing friendship. Mm. And I didn't get that watching the film. I kind of was like, Ruth Wilcox is a bit nutty, a bit bananas.
And Emma Thompson's doing some kind pastoral visiting.
She's a nice person.
That's what I thought. Yeah, she's just really nice. It seemed like a one-way friendship.
Yeah. Mrs. Wilcox never asks about Meg. She just talks about her house.
She does. She's a real one-note kind of gal. I loved the two-dimensional drawing of the other Wilcoxes, the petty ones who are like, oh, no, she never would have left it to her. And then when they burnt the note, that was good. I got an audible gasp out of that. Like, they did it. They burnt the note. What struck you upon a rewatching?
Okay, what struck me was a few things. Firstly, you said the characters are quite two-dimensional, but I love the characters in Ian Forster novels. Like, I feel like they're just such people that you really know, and they're not of their time either. I know an Aunt Julie now, and I know a Henry Wilcox now, and I know a Charles Wilcox. Well, you think they're two-dimensional, so I guess we just...
No. That's an accusation specifically leveled at the spouses, the Wilcox children and their spouses.
Well, yeah, Dolly. But then I think I met a Dolly.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone's quite that vapid. Yeah, they're just sort of caricature villains, I think. But go on.
They are quite villainish, aren't they? So I think the characters are very real, and that made me really dislike the fact that I don't think it makes sense that Meg marries Anthony Hopkins' character.
Oh, yeah.
That I think is what stuck out to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, no, I agree.
It doesn't make sense. What about you?
Yeah, I didn't like that. I also didn't understand it. It felt disloyal to her friendship with Ruth. I thought, I know some people, like biblically, you might think it's a very loyal way of honouring someone by looking after their husband, but it just seemed completely out of the blue. I was like, I could feel it building when they were standing on a staircase. He's showing her around a house that she could have. But I thought, no, it's not going to happen. And then she kissed him just there.
Yeah.
Brazen on the stairs. I liked the different social dimensions that were explored. I liked that it was across different layers of society. And the Jackie Leonard storyline made me very sad.
Why? It's such a happy story.
Helen Schlegel was just Helena Bonham Cartering about. Overall, yes, I liked it. It was unexpected and sad and sort of like Thomas Hardy-esque, but ended on more of a happy note. Tragic, preventable incident. The fact that it was left in a note that was then burned reminded me of when Tess writes the note confessing that she'd had a baby when she's about to get married. She slips it under the door and it gets caught under the rug, so he never sees it. So all these kind of like little twists of fate reminded me of that. All right, talk to me about the casting, because it is a stellar cast. This is partly why I was like, how have I never heard of this? Because flipping heck, there's a constellation up in there.
Yeah, so the casting director was Celestia Fox, which is such a like posh
name.
Celestia Fox. Of course she did the casting for a Merchant Ivory adaptation of Ian Forster. Of course.
Amazing.
But it is a stellar cast. So you've got Emma Thompson as Margaret Schlegel. You've got Anthony Hopkins as Henry Wilcox. Helena Bonham Carter as Helen Schlegel. Mm-hmm. Vanessa Redgrave as Ruth Wilcox, Samuel West as Leonard Bast, and then a few other people as well in the mix, but they're kind of like the mainies, aren't they?
The mainies. The big hitters.
I thought it was like pretty well cast. Yeah.
Yeah. I read an interesting piece of trivia, which I'm sure you also know, related to the casting about Ruth. About Vanessa Redgrave.
Oh yeah, I've got two. You tell me.
The one that I had was that they really wanted Vanessa Redgrave, and it was very touch and go whether she'd be able to do it because she was involved in another project. And then she agreed. She showed up to hair and makeup, and then as she was in hair and makeup, only then did she discover she wasn't actually playing Margaret. She was playing the elder Mrs. Wilcox.
I didn't know that trivia. Okay, I didn't know that at all.
So she thought she was Margaret, which is like, oh, what a burn for her ego.
And they really like made her old. Yeah, yeah. They did it kind of dirty, didn't they?
I know.
But I wonder if she did kind of like a hammy performance, to be honest.
Yeah.
Okay, my bits of trivia are completely different.
That's right. Really
good. Aunt Julie is played by an actress called Prunella Scales, which also posh person name. Prunella Scales.
This is sounding familiar. Where else have we seen Prunella?
Prunella Scales is the mother of Samuel West, who plays Leonard. The casting of Leonard, I think, is somewhat of a low point, just because he comes off as such a posh boy.
Yeah.
Like, he tries to be kind of like working class. Well, he's not really working class, but, you know, like lower middle class, yeah, or whatever. But then he just come across as real posh.
Oh, do you think so?
Like a posh MP who's trying to like ingratiate himself into the...
That's funny. No, I disagree. I think he did quite a good job of being aspiringly, upwardly mobile. Yeah, I definitely got that. By the way, Prunella Scales is definitely a name we should know because she was Sybil Fawlty in Fawlty Towers.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So she's a big deal.
She.
Pruny.
And then the Redgraves are a big family in British acting.
Mm-hmm.
So the actress that plays Evie Wilcox, one of the Wilcox daughters, is the niece of Vanessa Redgrave, who plays her mother.
Okay.
Period dramas.
Let's talk about Helena Bonham Carter. She is probably my husband's least favourite actress. In fact, she definitely is.
Really?
Yeah. Richard watched it with me, which was nice. And he was like, oh, no, Helena Bonham Carter again. He thinks she's the same kind of witchy, scatty character in every single thing she's in. Mm. I thought she showed a little bit more diversity here. I thought it was a little bit different, and I enjoyed it. What did you think of her casting as Helen Schlegel?
She was cast in quite a few E.M. Forster adaptations because she's in Room with a View as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think Where Angels Fear to Tread. She has a very strong look.
Like
that pre-millennium Helena Bonham Carter with the amazing hair that I just want her hair so badly. That's my dream hair. Is Helena Bonham Carter.
Really?
Yeah, it really is. She's got such a look that I kind of think she is a bit samey, but she's just I think she does a good job because when I picture the character, like I really do picture her. I'm not like, oh, she doesn't quite fit. So yeah, I think she does a good job, but I wouldn't like write home about her.
No, I specifically noted that she had terrible hair.
What?
Yeah, I put her character had really terrible hair.
That's so funny. I love her hair so much.
It just looked like it was like a horse's mane that was just pinned up there. Like,
oh, so good.
I don't think that was her real hair.
You don't think so? It's the exact same hair that she has the exact same hair in Room with You. I think it's her real hair.
Okay. Maybe. And also Vanessa Redgrave was very disheveled. That was just a critique of mine throughout the whole thing. I was like, were people in 1910 just like letting the hair loose? My first note that I wrote was loose hair, loose morals. I think there's a connection there. You know, it just seemed implausible. I don't know enough about Edwardian hairstyles, but would they really have had it loose like that? I don't know.
The loose bit for Vanessa Redgrave's character is that she's relaxed at home, you know, she's in her really happy, relaxed place. And that's what it's
okay. Like. All right. Well, I'm here for symbolism, but
Helena Bonham Carter's hair, I think it's because she's meant to be, you know, bohemian.
Yes. Emma Thompson is wonderful because she's wonderful in everything, I think. I saw that Tilda Swinton was also considered for that part.
Wow, she would have been too young. Emma Thompson, I don't think Emma Thompson is too young, but like
looks a bit too glamorous, which is why Vanessa Redgrave could legitimately think she was going to play the part. So I think she is kind of meant to be viewed as a spinster. And I think that's kind of maybe one of the reasons why you meant to think that it makes sense that she would marry Henry Wilcox, because it's like no one else is going to marry her and she wants to get married.
Yeah.
Because Emma Thompson looks so lovely and seems so lovely, like that doesn't read. But I think maybe that's in the book.
Okay. Interesting. She's
meant to be older and more spinstery and more have the disheveled hair and bohemian look. But then the question becomes, then why does Henry Wilcox want to marry her?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's its uncrackable code there. It just seems very respectable at the beginning. Like, I think she's wearing a tie when you first see her.
I liked that tie.
I bet you did, to show that she's, you know, a little bit oldie.
Like, I'm relevant.
Circa 2000. She's Eleanor again from Sense of Sensibility. Oh, she's Eleanor. Who's the responsible sister, the elder sister who sorts everything out, gets them a house, you know? It's like the exact same plot.
So that's another thing that's clearer in the book, that Tibby, the brother, is a lot younger. So you thought that he was an invalid. But I think he's supposed to be like 16 when it starts. Oh,
yes. No, it didn't come across like that. It came across like he was a crazy, self-indulgent invalid or something.
No, he's later on when they have the scenes of him at Oxford. Is it Oxford? I don't know. I think it's meant to be like doing his undergrad.
That's him doing his undergrad. My goodness. I thought he was ancient. I was like, oh, yeah, he's gone off for a PhD or something. I just enjoyed all the casting, really. Poor old Jackie.
Oh, yeah.
She sort of reminded me of, like, Nancy from Oliver Twist.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
Just to but go a bit more brash.
To Emma Thompson. She won the Oscar, the Golden Globe, and the BAFTA for this role.
Period fashion. Let's talk about the fashion. So I've already said that I'm not a fan of the hair.
And I've said that I am.
And I do prefer the Edwardian dress style to the Victorian. Just seems more practical, you know?
I don't think that it was, though. Didn't they have really painful corsets that made their bodies look like an S?
Yeah, that's probably true.
I actually like the fashions, the Edwardian fashions, better too.
Mm-hmm.
But they have like the hobble. I don't think it would have been better. They have like the little hobble skirt as well, right?
What's the hobble skirt?
It makes you hobble.
Oh, because it's so tight. Because
it's tight around your calf.
Like a pencil skirt. But worse.
I liked Meg's clothes. I liked Meg's tie.
Yep.
The dresses that Meg wears at Evie and her Mr. Bland's wedding.
Do you really?
I liked those dresses, yeah.
Okay.
I like the dress where Dolly and Charles Wilcox are in the castle. They get worried that she can hear them. And I think that's just trivia about me. You know how I hate people who say baby, like instead of the baby, they go like, has baby arrived? And
yeah.
No, that's from that. Because Dolly says, you are excited about baby, aren't you? Or something like that. And that's where my hatred of baby started anyway.
I liked when she's wearing some very nice lace, like a lace kind of top.
Yeah, that's
high collar.
Amazing.
Oh, is that the one you like too?
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. It reminded me of, what was that phase when everyone was wearing lace dresses? You know, you and I were friends during this phase.
Mm.
You would wear like a lace kind of overdress, 2012 or something.
Yeah, 2012. Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't realize it was a callback to Edwardian fashion, but thanks for that. Emma Thompson, and for so much more. Jackie's fashion was obviously a statement.
Well, that's very Nancy-ish. I guess that's where you think
it is very Nancy-ish.
But it's like watching an aging whore, right? So aging whores always, I don't know.
I know. Is she meant to be that old? Like, she looks really old.
She is meant to be, because Leonard's not even meant to be 21. Like, when it starts, he's 19 or 20, I think.
Right.
And then she's meant to be 26.
Oh, wow.
Or maybe a bit older. It's at least 26. Because Henry Wilcox had an affair with her when she was 16, and that was about 10 years ago.
Oh, true. Yeah. No, I think she looks like kind of pushing 40, honestly.
Yeah.
Okay, so fashion, like, it was all right. Not particularly remarkable, I don't think. I don't think there's, like, iconic outfits in the same way that there are in other period dramas.
I think they did a good job of telling you things about the characters with the clothes.
Yeah. True, which is the role of a costumer, I suppose.
Yep. anyway.
Well, we should talk, actually, the probably the one iconic piece of, I don't know if you would call it fashion, but the prop is the umbrella.
Mm.
Now, the umbrella is the meet cute between Helen Schlegel and Leonard Best, because they're both at a classical concert lecture. Helen is so scatterbrained, she just grabs up the umbrella of the person next to her and runs out into the rain. And Leonard, because he obviously is quite poor, is determined.
He needs that umbrella.
So he pursues her for a very, very, very long time and then ends up awkwardly at his door. And that is a fantastic meeting. I loved that scene. And then Richard pointed out when she was going through, going, oh, which umbrella could it be? We were like, the wet one. The one that's just been out in the rain, you idiot. No. And then she grabs his and is like, oh, it won't be this tatty, shabby one. And then he's like, yeah, that one's mine. Oh, heartbreaking.
I think she's quite in that scene, like manic pixie dream girl, don't you reckon?
Yeah.
Like, is it a knobbly one or a other one?
Yeah, totally. Oh, we haven't talked about in casting the cameo by Rowan Atkinson. Did you catch that?
Rowan Atkinson's in it.
No, but there is a maid who looks exactly like Rowan Atkinson. So that was just a cheeky cameo.
Apparently Crispin Bonham Carter, aka Mr. Bingley's in it. But I did not catch that at all.
Oh wow. Who's he playing?
I was like, I don't know. I was like, I didn't catch Rowan Atkinson or Crispin Bonham Carter.
Who even are you?
Who am I?
We actually found loads of cameos. So it was Rowan Atkinson, Hugh Laurie. Hugh Laurie, but someone who looked like Hugh Laurie. Mm-hmm. And David Mitchell was also in it at some point.
I think I remember the David Mitchell man.
Yeah. So but I'm going to have to go back through and screenshot them.
This isn't a sign of a good film if you would focus that much on the background actors, is it?
Period dramas.
So a lot of period dramas are very romantic. I always think of it as a very romantic genre. Do you find this film to be romantic?
No, because I'm not here for any of the romances. The one romance that I think we're all here for is Vanessa Redgrave and Howard's End. Like you said, that's the true love of the film.
That is the true love. That's the purest love.
That is the purest love. Henry just seems like a real seedy guy, to be honest. Cool. Like the Jackie thing and the revelation that he's had an affair with her, I'm like, sure. Of course.
Yeah, it makes complete sense.
He's
such a person that you know who like won't take responsibility for anything, but then at the same time probably like bangs on about personal responsibility and poor people deserving to be poor.
Yeah, I know. I just don't warm to him. And I look down on Margaret for marrying him. And then especially for staying with him at the end. I was so excited at the end when she says, like, I'm leaving you and I'm going to look after Helen. I was like, yes.
But then I think he gets reformed.
He started crying. Yeah,
I think he's been reformed. Apparently, I don't remember this from the book, but apparently in the book, him being reformed is clearer.
It's very uncomfortable watching acquiesce to so many of his requests when they're married. One of his requests, his demands. But, you know, she comes across as such an amazing, empowered, free thinker.
Mm.
Who seems completely happy with her lot, to be honest. Mm. Like, there was no hint that she wanted to get married. That's the thing. Like,
there is that one scene near the beginning. She's looking out the window and she looks through the window at Ruth and Henry Wilcox having a romantic moment and she looks kind of wistful. And I think that scene's meant to do a lot of heavy lifting about why she would marry him. But also, so there's another romance story that we haven't talked about at all. Which also I think isn't indicative that it's a very good film, and that's Leonard and Helen.
Oh, I know. Again, that feels like a really unhealthy relationship. Oh. Like,
what do you mean?
Based on like some kind of savior complex by Helen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is like the worst kind of thing, where she's like, "I'm going to save you. I'm also going to completely undermine your relationship."
Yeah, and I'm going
to hook up with you.
Fetishize you as
yeah,
well.
Yeah. Like that, which she does. Yeah, no, I don't like it. When I saw them in the boat, I was like, oh no, it's gonna happen.
And it would probably be quite uncomfortable because they had those they had bench seats across.
So yeah,
I don't know how they even did it. Where did they even get that rowboat?
I don't know.
That scene's not in the book. Yeah, I don't think their love story is tragic romance where if Jackie hadn't been around, they would have ended up together. Like they...
No. I feel like Helen was going to be Helen and do what she wanted. Yeah. And I don't feel like there was a future for her and Leonard in any universe or that she would have wanted that. What was she getting out of it apart from an ego boost?
Yeah. Some quite like maybe condescending ideas about the worthy poor as well. Like,
yeah, that's right.
To her because he likes books and things, right?
Yeah, and would she, if he was of the same class background as her, would she have been attracted to him? I don't know. So I didn't find it a very romantic film at all.
No. Except, no. Except obviously, for Mrs. Wilcox and the house.
And the house, yes. Well, was she, to be honest, I thought she was sort of coming onto Margaret quite hard. I noted there was a lot of face touching.
Yeah, she did seem to be very much in love with Margaret. But then if your husband was Anthony Hopkins, you would stray.
Yeah, and she was a very nice friend. She was the shopping trip, just listening to her bang on about Howard's End. Like that is true love. So I think maybe they're the secret couple that never was. Yeah, exactly. And there was some weird idea that they could be joined through Henry or something. That's my hot take.
That's your reading?
That's my reading. Did you have any lines in the film that you loved that you thought were linguistic fireworks that were amazing?
The only one that's stuck in my brain is in the music and meaning seminar led by Simon Callow, was it? Anyway, I can't remember the character's name. Anyway, one person in the audience says, "Why a goblin?" And that's always stuck in my head. It's not like a big moment in the film at all. It's like you can barely hear it, but it goes, "Why a goblin?" What about you? Any lines?
So I've written down a couple. At the Bloomsbury, the dinner party, which Margaret invited Ruth to, when they're all talking about the vote and men and the patriarchy and stuff, it really stands out when Ruth's like, "I'm grateful not to have the vote."
Yeah, bless her.
Yeah, bless her. I know. I also wrote that there's a bit where they are described as aggressively hosted by screaming women.
That's the bit with the scone. Like, have a scone. Do have a scone. Tibby, you have to host more.
Yes. And Richard said, "That's me when he brings friends around."
he's so nice to you, isn't he?
I know. IMDb's top quotes. "Mr. Wilcox, I am demented." Apparently Margaret says that.
I have no idea.
Oh, I like the euphemisms when they think that Helen is crazy at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Henry's been pushing this narrative and then Margaret kind of gets on board and they bring a doctor and she says, "I think she may be a little touched."
That's so funny because I was trying to think of a way to describe Mrs. Wilcox, Ruth Wilcox, to you at the beginning. I was like, she's kind of a bit touched. But then I was like, I can't say that.
Oh, well, you can. And you can't quoting...
say it. It's an Edwardian term. But in the way she had been touched by a penis because she was pregnant.
I mean, exactly. So it works on so many levels.
So many levels. She drinks a tea drink. She drinks a port drink. She drinks a spruce beer. She drinks an orange wine.
Drinking games.
Drink.
Go on, hit me.
Anytime someone covers their mouth while crying, or like, you know, their face is very, very Merchant Ivory, actually, a real Merchant Ivory move, very, I think, period drama move, period drama move, especially repress that emotion. Don't show crying.
Always.
Anytime Mrs. Wilcox is just real weird about Howard's End.
I was going to say, every time the phrase Howard's End.
And finish your drink, any mention of the pig's teeth.
Oh, that was cool. I liked that bit.
Are you going to put some teeth tree in your house?
It was really weird.
And then chew it for toothache? And then I also thought, it's a bit dark, but kind of any oblique reference to colonization, because it's real in there. So, so the Wilcox's company is called the Imperial and West African Rubber Company.
Oh.
And then one of the reasons why Paul at the beginning says to Helen, "We can't get married," is because he's going to Nigeria to make his fortune.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Wilcox's brother died in India. And then Mr. Wilcox mentions often on like business in the East. And I guess that is somewhat in the novel, but then probably brought out more.
That's quite a serious one.
Yeah, sorry. Bring the tone down.
No. I think you definitely need to down an entire drink when Emma Thompson has another great cry. Because she is the queen of realistic ugly crying. And I had a question. Have you ever cried in front of a mirror?
Okay, so we've got two things to say. The first thing to say is, this crying reminded me a lot of her crying in Love, actually. And I don't know if that's true, but like, I felt like it was a similar.
Mm.
It was different to the crying in Sense and Sensibility.
Oh, that is the best cry. But yeah, that's a happy cry.
Crying in the mirror. I haven't done it in a long time, but I have been known to look in the mirror and cry. Have you?
That definitely sounds like something I would do. I'm not sure that I've consciously done it, but I did save you the night, Richard. Oh, my emotions. not as a joke, like just genuinely, I said, oh, I have such complicated emotions or something. This is not a drinking game. Well, it could be a drinking game. It's every time there's horrific editing. The editing really got me. Like the time-lapse blackouts.
Oh.
Like there were so many time-lapse blackouts. Oh, this is such a bad way to do it.
I'm pretty sure I got nominated for editing.
Okay.
It could be completely wrong.
Well, I disagree. So, yeah, that's what we're up to.
Drink anytime Jenny wouldn't like the editing.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't realize I was such a snob.
You spin me right off, baby, right off. Like Joey, baby, let's make a spin-off.
Any spin-offs that you'd like to see?
Well, I suspect we're going to be on the same page here because my last note I put is, what happened to Jackie? 5! Like, it's ridiculous. They just leave her hanging.
Well, they didn't. And I remember this from the book, and this is also clear in the film, that they do not give a hoot about Jackie.
No.
She's very underwritten, and they're real mean about her. And she's actually had such a hard life. So I would like the story told from Jackie's perspective, with Jackie having a deeper character than just like aging whore. Maybe she opens a small business selling tongue. That's a bit A. She's like, there's some tongue left up.
Yeah, I'd like the backstory as well, actually, because I feel like it's just alluded to in very vague, generic. She's had a hard life. Yeah. But I would like to know about that. So
surviving.
And I'd like to know more about her and Leonard like meeting. And
I think it's kind of like implied that she glommed onto him when he was young. And then it's just dragging him down. And without her, he would flourish. But she's...
No, I know. I also thought it was pretty weird, actually, that Paul Wilcox is such a non-event. Like, having been a catalyst at the start, he just disappears.
Well, I think the whole thing at the start is kind of weird, to be honest. The whole thing at the start really does feel very divorced from the rest of it.
I know. And so I'd like to know more about him. I'd like to know about Aunt Julie.
Well, yeah, and Julie, she seems quite nice.
But what's her deal? Tibby, I could not give two hoots because...
I was thinking that. Only thing, okay, so one of the things that I thought about a lot was like their modern day equivalents. So Tibby would definitely have YouTube channel, Instagram, TikTok, something about his food preferences and like, excuse me, eating a scone, like that kind of nonsense. Mrs. Wilcox would definitely still be heartbroken over Princess Diana dying. Like she would, Mrs. Wilcox would definitely be someone who's like still rolling to Princess Diana.
He's so nostalgic.
And also be like, well, yeah, women should earn less because they do have babies. Like she'd be that kind of person, you know?
Yeah.
Helen would be part of Extinction Rebellion. Helen would be like gluing her tongue to a motorway.
Yeah.
And Charles Wilcox would be like hardcore Brexit voter. UKIP, like, we do need to kick all the immigrants out.
Yeah.
Illegal refugees are ruining this country.
Yeah.
And
I see that for him. But what about Margaret?
Well, that's the thing. She's quite a tricky one.
Mm.
I don't think I could, like, I think Margaret is who she is, while the other ones are more stereotypical.
So you don't think she sells out on her personality by marrying Henry? Because that's how I feel, but maybe it's just me projecting who I want Margaret to be rather than who the character is.
I think who the character is someone who wants to love and be loved, right? She's very nurturing towards her friends, and she's nurturing towards her siblings. And
invalid sibling, yeah.
Invalid sibling. Both of her siblings, she's very nurturing. The mother, the parent substitute.
The mother hen.
The mother hen.
Yeah, she is.
And so she just, and I think she wanted somebody to love and look after, and for them to look after her. So I don't know.
So, yeah, she's a complex character, so we like her. I can see why she won the award.
Definitely. And that's why we're talking about it so much as well, because she is.
It is.
Period. Drama. Henry Wilcox is a 3. Helen is an 8.
Helen's such an 8. Yeah, she is. Yeah, got a cause. She's fighting for someone.
It's always about power and anger. Yeah. Leonard is a 4, Enneagram 4.
Going to his little lecture.
Yeah.
Romanticizing everything. What do you think Margaret is? Is she a 2, like a helper, nurturer, or is she like a 6, like a loyalist?
Oh, Dolly is such a 6.
Okay, but what about Margaret? I think Margaret might be a 6.
I think Margaret's a 2, a 1, or a 6. I think Caleb said she's a 1. Caleb's a 5, and he's like, no, Tibby's definitely a 5.
Yeah, I don't know. I like Caleb, but I've got no time for Tibby. I think I've made that clear. So overall, are you giving this beloved childhood film a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
I'll give it a thumbs up. I like E.M. Forster a lot. I like Merchant Ivory films a lot. I like Emma Thompson. I like the comments on humans and class. And I thought it was very pretty. I thought it was a very pretty film. Yeah.
I give it a sideways thumb because I didn't dislike it. I enjoyed it, but I wouldn't say I loved it. I didn't see it as a perfectly crafted film. I thought there were weird plot holes, as we've discussed. But I definitely would watch it again. So I'm a sideways leaning upwards thumb. So that's it. That's Howard's End.
That's the end.
You've been listening to Period Drama Queens with Jenny May and Millie Day.
Don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow us on Instagram @Period Drama Queens. See you next time.
Bye.